You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce. Maggie Olson is a creative, kind, loving mother and grandmother. She grew up in Marin County, California, where she enjoyed being in nature and developing her artistry. She has lived many places, both for school and to help her kids and grandkids. She has many talents, including storytelling, puppetry, clowning, face painting, design, drawing, painting, and making dream catchers. She is a selfless and giving believer in God. Her story begins with her parents.
My dad's name is Roy Olson, and my mom is Nancy Finn. Both of them were raised in San Rafael. And they met, I believe the story is that my mom was selling tickets to something, either at a football game. Anyway, she was selling tickets, and somehow that's how they met. They went to different schools, so they didn't go to school together. And it's funny because my mom had a previous boyfriend, and his name was Martin, but Martin and my father were very good friends. My dad had a girlfriend at the time, and her name was Donna. My dad had a really good friend named Rich Nave. So my dad and Rich, and he had another friend, Tom McGrath, and Tom McGrath was a few years older. Donna, my dad's girlfriend at the time, she ended up marrying Tom McGrath. They were all friends. And, you know, in those days, everybody had big families. So when we got together for things, we'd had like 40 zillion children and, you know, all the parents.
Not only were those family friends a big part of Maggie's upbringing, but also her extended family, especially her grandparents.
Well, I grew up with two sets of grandparents, and I think I was probably pretty lucky with that because both sets of grandparents lived a long life. So they lived until their 80s and 90s. On my mom's side was my grandma and my grandpa Finn, and they lived in San Rafael in Marin. My grandma was a funny lady, always talked. And it was funny because she could probably talk to anyone in the room and not specifically really to anyone, but they would take care of us when we were little. It was a treat to always go spend the night with my grandparents, and they weren't that far away either. So we always spent New Year's with them. And my grandfather, he would go and get crab for us to eat, just all sorts of different treats and things. And that was the big thing, was New Year's, is we had to do that. And he would buy all the party stuff, so hats and things like that. And we had to watch Lawrence Welk because my grandfather loved to dance. He would take turns dancing with him to the music and everything. And it was just a big party with them and all us kids, you know. And sometimes we would have cousins that would come and spend the night too. And then New Year's would roll around. My grandma would get out pots and pans and we'd go out and make noise and yell and do all the noise making things. The older ones would stay up, and sometimes we would watch movies till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning with my grandmother, and a lot of old movies and stuff. So that was always a fun thing to do with them. My grandfather would take me to my ice skating lessons, and I think I felt really special for that kind of time with him. He wasn't much of a talker, but his thing was, and he would always say this, that he was the toughest guy this side of the Mississippi. And he looked that way. He was really tall. He was at least 6'2", and strong guy. He would grab you and hug you and then wouldn't let you go, and you would fight him to try and get loose, and he would grab you with his fingers and, you know, pinch you. It was funny. I don't know how to describe my grandma. She was hilarious, though. She's always funny, always partying. They were treasures, those two. And then on my dad's side, we called my grandparents Grandma Pete and Grandpa Pete. And my grandmother was very tiny, maybe a little over 5 feet. She was short. And she was Mexican. So, she made her own Mexican food. So she made everything from the beans, rice, tortillas. Her tortillas were amazing. And I can remember being in her kitchen when I was little, and she would have us stand up on a stool and watch her make tortillas. And if we would spend the night at her house, she'd have us help make the pancake batter and everything for breakfast. And she was quiet. They lived in San Rafael too. And we saw them, gosh, I can't even remember how old I was, maybe until the time I was right before high school. And then they had a falling out with my parents, and it was over something that was just so silly. And so then we didn't see my grandmother for a few years, maybe about 10 years we didn't see her, but my dad would go visit her. I think he snuck that. He didn't tell my mother he was doing it. And then my grandmother had an accident where she fell, and so my dad started to take care of her. So then we would see my grandmother. They actually lived together for a while, where my grandmother had a separate little apartment type thing. So I would go over and spend time with my grandmother and help her, because she didn't walk very well. She had arthritis really bad, so she was walking with a walker a lot. My grandpa Pete, he lived until just after I got married. So at my wedding was the last time that there was a picture of all my grandparents together at one time. And Christmas Eve, we did it with our house. And then Christmas Day was wherever, with either my grandparents or my dad's mom and that kind of thing. So they were always around. Every party, somebody had a birthday, somebody got married, somebody's engagement parties, whatever, people visiting. We always had these big family things. We always had my grandparents who were always around for us. So I do remember from probably the age of 3 living in Novato, California, which was actually a little bit more north, but still in Marin County. And then we moved from Novato back to where I actually grew up, was in San Anselmo. There were 6 of us. So I had 4 sisters and a brother. My oldest sister, her name is Debbie. And then Kathy, then me, I'm the 3rd one. Diane is the 4th. And my brother is Roy or Mick. And my youngest sister is Leanne. So my sister Diane and I were in the middle. My sister Kathy's no longer alive. She passed away when she was 39. Kathy and I were only 10 months apart. So there were times that for a month, her and I were the same age. And then darn it, she got older. My mom had all of us by the time she was 26 years old. We lived in an old convent from the Catholic Church. The house that I grew up in was probably about 100 years old at the time. Next door to us was another convent that was actually the more modern one. And then we lived across the street from the school. My mother is Irish, and she was Catholic. And so we naturally, all of us were baptized Catholics at St. Anselm's Church in San Anselmo, and went to church every Sunday. Even when we were away for anything, we always had to go to church. When the 60s happened and into the 70s, they came out with what was called a folk mass. So my sisters and I sang in their first folk masses. When we were in high school, meeting other kids and getting to know other kids, we actually were friends with people that went to the Lutheran church. Then we developed a singing group, and it was an interfaith group. So we had, at one point, I think we had 50 kids from high school that we all got together and played guitar in everybody's talents. So somebody played piano, somebody might have played a trumpet or whatever, or different instruments. But most of us played guitar. So my sisters and I played guitar. We would always have the same outfits we had to wear. And my mom would have us sing together. And when we had holidays and things like that, we would go to my grandparents' house and we'd have to sing for them. And then we'd have to go in the neighborhood to their friends and sing, Christmas carols and things for their friends and stuff, but always lined up by age, like the Osmonds. But we sang from the time we were little up until married life. growing up in San Anselmo was an amazing place to grow up because we were outside all the time. So we would play softball in the street and we would play tag and kick the can. And across the street, we had a place, it was called the San Francisco Theological Seminary. And people from all faiths would go there for college to learn theology and kind of look like a mountain in the middle of this neighborhood. And at the top were buildings that looked like castles. So it looked like there was this mountain with a castle in the middle of the town. And we lived right down below it. So when we were young, we'd run around and play and up there and create all sorts of adventures because those were the times where you had Robin Hood on television and we played army and all that kind of stuff. So we would play hide and seek all over the mountain and run around and we climbed all over that place. And that was like our hidden treasure sort of thing. All the kids in the neighborhood would play all over that place. So it was fun. When we got older in high school, my sisters and I would go up there and at night when it was dark. I don't even know if my mom knew where we were, but we would go up there and just kind of hang out and have those kind of sisterly talks, you know, where you talk about boys and just how things were in your life at that time. So that was always a fun memory to have. We had another place. It was a big hill or mountain area, and we called it Mount Baldy. We would hike up there. And they had a couple of different little lakes and things up there. Climbing up to Mount Baldy was quite an achievement. But once you're up there, you could just run all over it. We had a lot of adventures up there as well. It was a really cool neighborhood to grow up in because we could wander and go visit our neighbors and just take walks and things like that. Because, you know, we didn't have money in those days. So that was something to do over by the Catholic Church. There was a road that you could walk from San Anselmo all the way to the next town, which was Ross. And it was called Shady Lane. It was a road that was lined by trees and wonderful houses that were all sorts of fancy things. And every once in a while, and when we were little, you had to get in really nice dresses. And in those days, you had to wear a hat. So we had hats and you had white gloves. And you usually had patent leather shoes. So you had white shoes or black shiny shoes. And, you know, you had to get all dressed up. So, you know, if we were going to go visit like an aunt or somebody or just go into the city for something, you had to dress up to do that. So where I lived, it was about an hour, maybe an hour to the beach. So we would go to the beach all the time, even just get in the car and load up and go for a drive. But that was kind of the thing to do also in high school, too, is that was the date place, you know, where you would go and hang out at the beach. And in those days, you could do bonfires and things like that. You know, we're close to the beaches, we're close to the mountains. So it was a pretty cool place to live.
Since her childhood, a big part of Maggie's life has been her dear family friends and going to their ranch.
My mom and dad always did 4th of July parties with friends. We had some other friends that lived in the neighborhood, and these two families were amazing. We had Jack and Bert Phillips. Her name was Roberta, but we called her Bert. And then we also had Bob and Betty Alvarado. We were all really close because when we were in San Anselmo, the Phillips had an apartment building, and my parents rented one of their apartments. And so they would have my parents for barbecues and things like that. All the kids grew up together. And then the Phillips had a piece of property in Sonoma. They have 40 acres of property and a house and all this. And we would go there. And I remember going there from the time I was probably about 2 on up. Their family has owned that piece of property for many, 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 many years. So through the generations, that property has been in my life. It has the most amazing view. Sonoma is called the Valley of the Moon. So from their properties on a place called Sonoma Mountain, and you look down into the valley. So there's just land and trees, and it's green and beautiful and everything. We've had so many family memories where we would, you know, we'd go and stay overnight, and they had so much property. They used to have a natural pond when I was little, and they had a diving board that was over the pond, and you could jump in and, you know, we were all swimming and all that kind of thing. And that was the place that, you know, we would go have fun. Of course, and then you'd go on little adventures. You go hiking around, and we would definitely climb trees. We were tree climbers. And then they had an old wagon there that you could climb and play on and everything, pretend you were cowboys and all that kind of thing. But we would have like big softball games there, and they built a pickleball court. It's just a magical place to be. And the best time of day, first thing in the morning, you just see how pretty everything is out there, and it's quiet, and it's just sort of a spiritual thing that happens to you when you're there. And it's just a magical place. So we call it heaven on earth. So, I mean, going there was the most amazing place to grow up. And the Phillips also had a boat, and they would go to a place called Lake Berryessa. We would go and camp, and this is in the early 60s. You had sleeping bags, towels, and you brought your food and you barbecue and everything. We didn't even have tents. We put all the sleeping bags on the beach and just lay them all out. You could see like 20 sleeping bags all in a row and all these little heads. And in the morning, you'd wake up and you could see across the mountains. I had one memory of Jack Phillips. So he had binoculars. He would come over and show us, you know, and you could see deer across at the mountains. And we'd pile all these kids and parents in the boat that they had. And the parents would go out and they would water ski. But yeah, they were amazing people. And I treasure those people very much. They were our neighbors. And if somebody had the chicken pox, it wasn't just one of us that got the chicken pox, you know. And, you know, it was more than one of us that would get sick. So my mom was like inundated with four children that were fevers and everything else. So, you know, Betty would come over and help her, and Bert would come in and make sure that we were good. You know, growing up with them, they were like second and third parents, you know, they were always watching out over us. And I think that's one of the things about growing up in an area like that, because, you know, even the people I went to school with, their parents, everybody knew everyone. So everyone would watch out for you. My brother, he would sleepwalk. Gosh, I want to say he was maybe five. And he just went out the front door, and he was in his pajamas, you know, and he got out the front door and he was wandering. We were all going, where'd he go? Where is he? So of course, then the army goes out. So all of us kids went out looking for him, and we found him up the street, and there were apartments that were up the way from us. And we found him up at the top, on the top floor of this apartment building, just, you know, hanging out there. And so we had to go get him and bring him home. And we had a police officer that knew everybody. He would just drive the neighborhoods and things. And so he found my brother one time downtown and put him in the police car and drove him home. So everybody who knew anybody in that town always was watching out for you. So you always knew you were safe. We could trick or treat and go for miles. It was fun.
In her youth, Maggie was involved in many different things, including figure skating.
I started skating until the age of 13. And in our town, we had a small little ice rink. It was called Radine's. And it was owned by a husband and wife. And I maybe had gone to a birthday party or something where we went ice skating, and then fell in love with that. And so I took lessons from the owner of the ice rink. So they had the small rink, and then it was too small. So then they built another one in another town in Marin called Corte Madera. So then we would have to go there to go skating. So I took the bus all the way to Corte Madera, and then had to walk from the bus stop probably about a mile or so back to the ice rink. So it was quite a long stretch. So I had to walk with my skates and everything, and then do my lessons and stuff. And then my dad worked nearby. So when I was done skating, then I would go wait for him, and then he'd go home. But sometimes my grandfather would take me to my lessons. He would watch me skate for about a half an hour or so, and then he'd take off and go home. I had a love of skating, and then my youngest daughter skated. She carried on.
Her other big passion was, and still is, art.
I probably started drawing and painting when I was like 11, and I would draw Disney characters. You know, we started off with paint by numbers kinds of things, and then oil paints and brushes and things. And I would just paint on paper. I did a lot of Disney characters, but then in school, I took art. Our high school was amazing because we had design classes, painting classes, drawing, jewelry, and ceramics. And we had really an amazing teacher. So I, from the time I was a freshman, I took art all the way through. So I was doing painting. I did take jewelry and made all sorts of cool stuff. Just had a bunch of different teachers that were pretty amazing. So that's how I started and kept doing it and still do it. Right now I'm doing like pattern design and just drawing. Being in high school was fun. I enjoyed high school. We made friends with everyone and got involved in things. I had a pretty easy time of it because my older sister, when I went into high school, she was a senior. I felt very special on my first day of high school because she was actually the school mascot for the football games. Her friends were cheerleaders. She drove. I got to go with her and hang out with the seniors for my first day of school. And she sort of paved the way for my entry into high school. And then I had my sister Kathy too. She was, you know, a year ahead of me. So I think every year there was at least three of us in school together. Three of my sisters or brother in school together. So when I was a senior, my brother was a freshman. I watched out for them all the time. And high school, I was very involved. I was my freshman class president. I was an officer at least once every year. Also was a freshman cheerleader. And then when I was a senior, I was in a group that we were the yell leaders for football. I was active in sports. I played basketball. And in my junior year, I was MVP for basketball. And my senior year, I did have a job. So I only went to school a half a day. And then I went to work. And I worked at the Marin County Law Library. Was where I got a job. So I would go from school and then go to work. And I believe I worked there for maybe a year or two. I was doing that when I was a freshman in college. I think I babysat from age about 10 or 11 all the way through high school. So most people had babysitting jobs and stuff like that. But of course, in those days, I only got a dollar an hour. I had one family that I babysat for all through high school. So when I was a freshman till I was a senior, and they lived in Ross, I would actually go there on Saturdays and I'd be there like all day and sometimes into the night. I cleaned, the mom would go out shopping or whatever. And then I was babysitting. The kids would have to give them a nap, feed them lunch, all that kind of stuff. And then do ironing. And I was cleaning the bathrooms and doing all of that for a dollar an hour. I mean, talk about cheap labor. I went to Marin Junior College. I was taking art classes most of the time, and I wanted to be an artist. So that's kind of where I stuck myself. And I went to a school called the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. So I had to go to Los Angeles to go to school. So I went to school for a year. And while I was down there, had an apartment with two roommates and worked as well. It was in a department store called the Broadway Department Store in Beverly Hills, of all places. We worked for $2.50 an hour, and we lived on that. I had an apartment. I didn't have a car, but one of our roommates had a car, so we would go to school and go to work all together, and then she would let us use the car to get us to work. So when I went to Los Angeles, was the first time I moved away from home. I don't think my parents were very okay about me going away, my mom especially. But they packed whatever I had in a little trailer. And the interesting thing was I did not meet my roommates until the day we moved into our apartment through a friend of our friend. Their daughter was already going to the Fashion Institute. So we connected, but we only talked by phone. When we got all the way to Los Angeles, we didn't have cell phones then. So we had to use dial phone and we couldn't get a hold of each other. So my parents had to go back home and we weren't connecting with my roommates. So my parents decided that I could stay at the Y. And we got all the way into registering me into a room. And I was sitting in a room. And then somehow either my parents or my roommate had called and said that they were there and that they would meet us at the apartment. So thank goodness my parents hadn't gone home yet. So they came and picked me up at the Y. And then we drove to our apartment building and met my roommates on the doorstep to our apartment. And then my parents, we said our goodbyes and my parents went away. They went home and there we were, the three of us having to move in together. So my roommates, one was Aline, her last name was Asternus and she was French. And then my other friend, her name was Jane. And Jane was doing fashion design and Aline was also doing fashion design and I was doing interior design. So we all went to the same school together. And what was really interesting is that through the year that we were there together, we were the only ones out of all the students of that year that lived there. We were the only ones that stayed friends. So that was pretty amazing. My friend Aline is my best friend. And she is my oldest daughter's godmother. You know, we've been through a lot together. So, and our friend Jane, she passed away maybe 10 years ago. She had cancer, but she was funny.
Maggie left school in LA with a certificate and having made her two lifelong friends.
When I came home, I moved in with my younger sister for a few years and then got married. I was 21 when I got married. My now ex-husband, I met him in high school. He was in my sister Kathy's class, so he was a year ahead of me. So they knew each other. And one of the things in high school was either in the morning before school, we hung out at what was called the canteen. You always got your hot chocolate and your buttered roll in the morning. And we would hang out before school in the canteen. So that's how I met him. We had broken up, actually, when I was a senior in high school, too. Things just weren't going right. So we broke up, and we both did our separate thing. And then a few years later, when I was living with my sister, I think he was in Texas. And when he got done with being in Texas, his mother called me. And he didn't know she called. I'm on the phone, and she's saying that he wanted to talk to me. And I went, okay. He was out in the garage doing something, working on a car or whatever he was doing. And his mom went out and got him and said that I wanted to talk to him. And then he gets on the phone and we're both going, what? And after that, we got together and then got married in 1977. When we first got married, he was still in the military. So we were scheduled to get married and he got a phone call from, I guess, a captain or whatever. And, you know, we had invitations printed. We had everything done. And he got a change in his orders. So we were going to have to move the wedding. All the plans had to change. And so we had to move the wedding up a week. We managed to get it all changed. And it was funny because probably everyone that was invited showed up. And then after that, he was stationed. We had to go to Massachusetts for a couple of months. And then from there, we went to Germany.
Maggie has some fun memories from her time living abroad.
Our landlady, of course, was German. Her name was Frau Baller. She would come up and knock on our door and bring us down to her apartment to watch television with her. Of course, we were watching German TV. So everything that we watched was in German. I didn't work during that time because we weren't there long enough and they didn't have a lot for people to do. So every now and then we would go places because we bought a little Volkswagen Bug. I think we spent like $200 on it and drove places. And we went and drove through Switzerland and France and ended up in Spain for a few days. And then we ended up with not too terribly a good amount of money. So we drove home. It took 16 hours and we ended up with $3. And that was, you know, because we had to save money to buy gas in order to get all the way home. That was funny. 1979, we came back from Germany and we moved into this tiny little apartment in San Anselmo, again, back in Marin. I think we were there for maybe a year and then moved to, we had bought a small mobile home in a mobile home park. I think we were there maybe a couple of years at the most, you know, and we wanted to start having kids and stuff, but we couldn't stay there because it was an adult park at the time. So we ended up buying a condo in Santa Rosa. I worked for a company. It was this couple who were into getting home loan information. Of course, technology was new. So computers were new. So what my job was is I had to call banks and get their rates for the home loans every day or whatever. And then people would buy those lists. But eventually, of course, you know, the internet. So I did that job for almost 2 years. Then I got pregnant with my son. It took a really long time to conceive, and then miracles happen. I really, really wanted kids. You get your mind into that thing, and so then it just doesn't happen. So then you got to do the thing where you just pray and let go. I did get pregnant with my first daughter, you know, and that was a hallelujah. And, you know, when she was born, I think my children really liked it inside. They didn't want to come out. So she was 4 days late and I had to walk the halls. And I know some people had much harder labor than I did, but I walked the halls for 14 hours. And then things happened and there she came. So we called her Corey Allen Ford, and her middle name was my brother-in-law's first name and her grandmother's middle name. So Allen was a family name. And Corey is, she's very sensitive, very quiet. She always hung back with me and didn't really go to people when she was little. And I think she's held on to that all her life. She's always one that just kind of hangs back and goes, let me see how the situation is, see if it's safe, and then I'll move forward. So she's, I wouldn't say shy. She does have that confidence and that go-get thing. She's very creative, loves art, and I think she loves to sing. Growing up, we had her playing soccer, and then in high school, she did band, so she played the trumpet. And so she was in the marching band in high school for most of the time that she was there. And then she became a fire explorer. Our town had a program for teenagers in the fire department, and she eventually became a reserve firefighter. Right now, she's getting her master's degree in fire science. I really am very proud of her for setting a goal to do that in her life and achieve that goal. So very proud of her for that. Corey's daughter, Lizzie's my oldest one, and Lizzie's 12 now. When she was born, she was tiny. Well, she was 6 pounds, but she was really small and thin. We had to buy preemie clothes for her at first, but that didn't last long. We would take care of Lizzie when Corey had to work and her dad had to work. And then when it came time for her to go to school, we homeschooled her for kindergarten and first grade. And then she went to regular school and we came back to homeschool. So we had Corey, and then 2 years later, we had my son. Brian came along, and he was quick. He came in 5 hours. It was a much different experience. And it's funny because all three of them are very different from each other. Corey was very quiet. She was one that would sleep for hours at a time, and I would have to go and see if she was still breathing. But Brian, he was more active. He was like, okay, Mom, in the middle of the night, I want to eat, and then I'm going to play and talk and do all this stuff. So, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, you're trying to go, okay, sleep, please. But he was always going, and he still is. He, as a young little thing, was kind of a little monkey. He loved to draw. He would draw for hours and hours, just all sorts of different things. Every day after school, out came the pencils and the paper. I think we went through stacks of paper for him. And then in high school, Brian played soccer too, and then played football for a little bit. He loves football. And he also loved music, so he played guitar, and he had a garage band in high school, the heavy metal kind of stuff that parents don't like. I describe him as my rebellious child. He stands up for what he believes in. He believes in the underdog and is very supportive of that kind of thing. He left home when he was 17 and stayed with another family because him and I had a falling out. That was hard. But he knew, I think, all along from the time he was young, what he always wanted. He was very sure of himself. So he was very independent. He went to a community college in Sacramento. And then he went away to Louisiana and went to Tulane University. And he graduated from there and then wanted to go into law. So he went to law school in San Francisco at Golden Gate University and graduated from there as well. And then he became a criminal defense attorney, which he's doing now. It's amazing the spirit and determination that people have to do what they really set out to do. And I am very proud of him for doing that. And he's done some hard work and he's been criticized a lot, and he does his job very well. And, you know, he's a very kind and caring kind of human being. He's married and he has my little granddaughter who's 3 and a half, and she's just like him. And then along came Jessie. She came 4 years after Brian. Her birth was traumatic as she was an emergency C-section. The nurse, she was kind of crabby. And so she was monitoring stuff and she would come in and out. And then this one time I felt stuff happening, but she comes in and slams the door open, like just runs in and slams the door. And I had, at the time, they put an oxygen thing in your nose. So she came in and ripped that thing off my face, put on the bigger one that goes way over your nose and your mouth. And it turned out that I was hemorrhaging. They took me downstairs. I think they were trying to find an operating room because the baby's heart at the time, her heart rate dropped. And they told us that there were no anesthesiologists available downstairs, so they couldn't do anything. So we had to turn around and go back up to labor and delivery. And they took everybody off the floor. And it was just a madhouse. I don't have a clue what they were doing. But at one point, I know that the doctor had to yell at everybody and say, calm down, stop yelling and whatever. It was one of those where everything just went real quiet. And I'm thinking, okay, you got to cry, you got to cry, you got to cry. Please make her cry. And so finally she starts crying. And then everything was okay after that. But that was 35 years ago. But a traumatic way to come into the world. But we survived it. And I would say she's been a fighter probably all her life. She always wants to know information in order to be able to make decisions and make the right ones. And I think she's very thoughtful about things that she does. So she takes a while to research things and know as much information about something as she possibly can before she makes a decision. Jessie ice skated. And of course, they all played soccer because I ran a soccer league. But I think from the time she was like 3 or 4, she was roller skating at that age. She could do that all by herself. So I thought she can do this on ice skates. So then we did lessons and things like that. I think it was when she was 9, we actually really started her on skating lessons. And she did little competitions here and there and group skating. She liked synchronized skating better. Just amazing stuff to watch. So she did that even into college. Then got married and she has my grandson. His name is Angus. Angus is 9 right now, which, gosh, I think every grandparent says this, is that they grow up too quick. I think the sensitivity, the empathy that they have, thinking more with their heart than their head, I think all of them turned out pretty darn good. I have to say I've been very blessed. Christmases were kind of a big deal for my kids. You know, when Christmas Eve came around, they'd all have to go to bed. And then Santa would come, and we had stockings on the mantle. We would go and fill everything, and we'd save change. And I would always put a handful of change in each stocking. They would always have to leave cookies out in milk. And then we'd always have to leave carrots for Rudolph. I'd be up till early in the morning, till like 2 o'clock or something, wrapping presents still or putting something together. We'd leave the carrots out. Of course, somebody has to take a bite out of the carrot. I always love that part. You go, oh gosh, it's midnight and I have to eat a carrot. I'd go outside and be sprinkling glitter all over the place, the bushes on the sidewalk, and then of course leave a footprint and everything. And so, yeah, that was my tradition there. We did that all the time. Even my grandkids, when they were around, we would do that for them too. If they came and stayed overnight or something, then we would make sure that all of that was done for them.
As Maggie said, she and each of her kids were very involved in soccer.
We moved from Santa Rosa to American Canyon, which is in Napa County, and we had bought a house, and we moved there when I think Jesse was like 15 months old. So for something to do, we put the two older ones in soccer. And at the time, the soccer league was run by men. So I decided to join that. And then I became what was called the regional commissioner for our area. So and I did that for 10 years. And it's funny because I never played soccer. But when my kids were involved in it and everything, and it's like I knew everything about it. I coached, I reffed a little bit here and there.
Maggie used her art talents to begin face painting, which led her to many other exciting hobbies.
My kids were probably really little, and I just started face painting at different little things, and I set up a booth and start face painting, and man, you know, you charge a dollar and there you go. So I started doing that. And when we lived in Santa Rosa, I was always into just creative kinds of things. So I took storytelling classes, and then the storytelling class led me to puppeteering and being into puppets. I took a class from a lady who is now a friend of mine who worked for Jim Henson. She was a puppeteer on the Fraggle Rock show. And when I took that class from her and then found out that there was an organization in the Bay Area that would get together and encourage each other and stuff and have these meetings where people would do their little performances and things like that and just develop their craft. You know, I started to do little puppet shows and things like that, and I would make puppets, and I learned a lot and I met a lot of interesting people. I met Frank Oz. So Frank Oz was Miss Piggy. His dad lived in Oakland. I went to his home for a couple of meetings. Just fantastic. His wife and him brought puppets over from Germany, and they had to cross the Berlin Wall. So they were in East Germany. They hid the puppets in a trunk, like in a false bottom kind of thing. But these were really large puppets. And he had some of those in his home, and his wife made the costumes for them and everything. So it was really fabulous. But I had all sorts of fun doing that and went to puppet festivals a couple of times. But I did that for several years, and that led into another organization of clowns. So I ended up doing that for several years, and I was full white face, had costume and everything. And then I had a partner, and we'd go to different things, and she would make the balloon animals and I would face paint. So we would do that. And every now and then I'd do a birthday party and did parades occasionally. And the fun thing about it, I think the best thing about it, when you come to a child who just looks at you like you were magic and you just go, wow, you can see it in their eyes and their face. That just maybe makes you feel so good.
Maggie also found a lot of satisfaction and joy while working with kids in schools.
So I had different jobs in the school district, and I ended up at the middle school that was down the road from us, and I was an attendance secretary there, and I became a principal secretary at another school in Napa and did that for 3 years, I believe, and then got a job at Napa Valley College, and I was a division secretary for the Fine and Performing Arts and was also their box office manager for all their events. And then I retired from there. Always enjoyed working with kids because being in the school district too, I worked with kids. I was a paraprofessional before I became a secretary. I worked in this program that was given a grant. We developed these two playrooms in one of the elementary schools. And the playrooms were used for a program where kids could come who needed to have help acclimating to school. Because a lot of kids are just like freaking out when they go away from mom kind of thing for the first time. And this was probably the most fun job I ever had because it was just all about playing. They were allowed 30 minutes to come in and do whatever they chose to do. And there were no rules except they couldn't hurt anything or anybody. So if they were angry or mad, they couldn't throw stuff unless we allowed them to do that. We had, you know, wooden blocks. They could build these big, tall things. And I had one kid who I said, here's a beanbag. You can throw it at that and knock it down. And he looked at me like, are you kidding? I can actually do that. And I said, why not? So some kid, I had one little girl who she came in the room and wouldn't look at me. She was like always there, had her head down and was really shy and didn't really want to say much. And so you try to be encouraging for her to either play with something or paint or draw, all sorts of things that they could do. And she would just not do anything for the first couple of times she was with me. I think I was sitting and coloring and she was sitting with me and she might have been coloring a little bit. I just started talking to her and we were started to talk about grandparents, and that perked her up because I guess she was living with her grandfather. I was joking and she started laughing, and from there she just like her head was always up. But it was a fun job.
Throughout her life, Maggie has had some very exciting adventures and travels.
I traveled with my kids, basically. My oldest daughter was in band in high school, so we did go to London. She played in a London New Year's Day parade. And then my youngest daughter was a figure skater, and then we traveled just a lot in the United States.
Besides living in Germany and trips with her kids, Maggie spent almost her entire life in California. That was the case until her youngest daughter, Jessie, began pursuing a career as a vet. This led her to move all over the country, and Maggie followed in order to help with her grandson, Angus.
They came back to California, and she did an internship in a town called Salinas, and that was during the pandemic part of that. Angus was starting, I think, pre-K, and finding someone to do daycare or care for nighttime stuff didn't happen. So grandma drove back and forth. I would drive down there during the week and then I would come home on the weekends. I did that for a year. Then she did another internship and it was a big decision that she went to Pennsylvania. We decided to follow them. My older daughter was going to move in and then we were going to leave and go with. So that's what we did. And we all drove across country and ended up in Pennsylvania in a little tiny little town out in the country, and it was horse country. We spent a year there in a gorgeous place. I miss it. And of course, we had to homeschool. That continued because then it was really into the pandemic. So we ended up following them to Hawaii. I was there for, I believe, 6 months. Gorgeous place. We lived on Kauai, got to go to the beach. It's a whole different experience.
It was around that time that Maggie made a big change in her life when she and her husband divorced.
I can say it's probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life. It's not fun. Don't recommend it for anyone. You know, being married for such a long time, the life that I lived was probably not real. It was probably what I thought was normal and was supposed to be that way. But in true life, as things got to the very end, like the last few years, things started to just go really crazy to the point where it was unhealthy. And it was either you choose to save your mental health, that it was a decision that I had to make. The hard part of all of it is that my family is not the family it used to be. You know, it's interesting because what was happening in my own family, my sisters and my brother and my parents, we were really close and everything growing up. But when my sister Kathy passed away, life really changed. And my parents definitely had a very hard time with that. And my mother specifically had a very hard time with that. It was like life ended in a way. I think she forgot that she had five other children. And that was hard. I feel that with my husband in a way. There was a point somewhere where he didn't live his life. He didn't make his own life happen. I think he lived his life through me and sort of had that expectation that I was always supposed to be there and take care and take care and take care. And I did that all those years, but there was a point where it just was like, whoa, it got to the point where he was not even hardly functioning. I had to stop the crazy. You can't always be a cheerleader because then nobody's cheering for you. And I just so firmly believe that now because you're a human being on this planet and you have worth. It's interesting that sometimes people I haven't seen since my divorce happened, they say, well, you look so much happier. And it's like, I don't feel that way, but okay. For the most part, things are good. It's not, I mean, I can't complain. It's quiet. Sometimes it gets lonely because I'm by myself, but I still have my sister. So we do things every now and then. And then a really good friend that I was in Los Angeles with. She's my best friend. And since divorcing and stuff, she told me when all of that was happening, she goes, well, I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you every week. And I went, okay. Since then, she's called me every week. And I was like, wow, not many people would do that.
Maggie is truly an amazing artist. And these days, you can find her continuing to create beautiful pieces.
So I found on Instagram, I found this ad for getting involved in pattern design. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is interesting. And it was an online course because it was the pandemic and everything. And so I got involved in doing that. So that actually got me into drawing again, because there was a period of time, of course, when I had kids, I didn't draw as much. I didn't paint or anything. So when I was in Hawaii, I really started to draw again. And then I found that and started to do that. So I've continued that, and I probably draw better than I ever have now. And I don't know if I have a particular style, but I can draw fairly realistically. But then I also have this more of an imaginative storybook type thing. So I draw a lot of flowers and things like that, and mountains, because I'm in the mountains. But yeah, it got me into drawing a lot more and doing a lot more. And I make dream catchers. And I started doing that because my dad makes them, and he's 94 and he still makes them, but he does traditional ones. And I started out doing traditional dream catchers and I taught myself how to do them. I use a lot of different yarns and things. I use a lot of natural things like shells and different stones and things like that of the earth. I really love making them. I think when this poem was dropped in my lap, so odd to me, it was just a place I think I needed to be. And I think God had a hand in that one because I really wasn't looking for this, but it was like it appeared. And it was one of those things, just you got to go see this place and you have to do this. And when we came, my sister came and her husband came with me. You know, we knocked on the door and came in, and the owner was here and he was really fun and welcomed me. The first thing he did was take us out on the deck and say, look at the view and everything. And so it's like, it was one of those where you know, had to control yourself and not jump up and down and go, wow, this is amazing. And it was funny because after we got the tour and everything else and we went to leave, all three of us were by the car. And it was one of those times where you just stopped and looked at each other and went, screamed, because it was like, oh my God. And my sister goes, Maggie, you have to rent this place. You have to get this place. And that night I sent the application and everything else. And around 9 o'clock, I got this message. It was from the owner's wife. And she said, we would be honored to have you live here. And it was like, whoa. You start crying, you go, oh my God, you know, and jump up and down and everything. And I think that these people, they're the nicest people. I count them as angels because I have never met a landlord that was so nice and so generous with everything. This house has 6.5 acres of property, 3-bedroom, 2-bath home, and the view to die for. Just like the ranch, I have a view of the mountain range across from me, as far as you can see. And then to the north is Mount Shasta. It's covered in snow still. And the view changes every day. It's not like it remains in one set thing. You could just watch the season happen. And I think I was meant to be here. So, and I think God was the one that did that. God has always been a part of my life. And I see God as a loving and kind God. He's not someone who is fire and brimstone sort of thing. I do believe in angels. And I do believe that God has given everyone a free will. I believe that he gave you the free will to create your own life and make your own decisions. And you may make bad ones. Not everything's good, but I think I'm on this earth because of him. And I think he's just always there. I pray every day, so I don't go one day without doing that, and pray in my own way. And I do believe in Jesus, you know, and it's not always, you know, in the Catholic way of thinking things either. I mean, God can be to me anything. And I look outside and I go, somebody had to do that out there.
As you've heard, Maggie has lived her life helping the people around her, especially her kids and grandkids. Her love for her family is inspiring. She's deeply connected with nature and sees the beauty around her. Her positive outlook is a great example for all of us. A huge thank you to Maggie Olson for making this episode possible and for being interviewed. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.